Welcome, travelers. We're aware that your journey was difficult, but prepare to have your questions answered, for you have been granted an audience with the Masters of Modern.
And welcome back to Masters of Modern. I am your host, Alex Kessler, here without my co-host. Ben Bateman is back home in Seattle visiting his family, because apparently he loves them, which is, I guess, adorable. Instead, I have recent GP Top 8, GP Phoenix Top 8 competitor, Michael Hughes, here on
the
podcast.
Hello, everybody. Hi. A pleasure to be here.
So today we're going to be talking about GP Phoenix because you top aided it. So you have literally ground floor experience about how it went down. It was extremely exciting. I watched it the whole weekend. The GP was won by Bloodbraid Elf, by a Bob flipping it and killing the controller.
That is true.
Which was, great.
I
love watching Modern. I mean, I think from a perspective, I mean, obviously I should. I'm a co-host of a podcast about Modern. But I think the world agrees with me. I think viewership on Modern GPs is generally higher. That's why they made this one. This GP was really not meant to be covered because they don't cover every GP anymore. And they were just like last minute being like, hey, because of the unbannings, GPs that are Modern are super exciting. And anyways, we get good viewership. Let's get people to GP Phoenix. And so we got like a bonus streamed GP. And it was awesome. The whole weekend was cool. KCI was in the top eight, which is no one saw coming.
Yeah, it was crazy. It was crazy.
From your experience, do you have an idea of the reason that this is the tournament it finally did well? Or
yeah, actually, I had a chance to talk with Matt Ness about why him and Ben Weitz were both playing KCI, and I just briefly asked them, and they thought that a lot of players would not be playing Stony Silence, and I think that ended up being true. Sure. Stony Silence is the one card that deck really has a problem beating. There are a few others, but basically they thought everyone would be on Jund, and that would be keep people off Affinity, and that would in turn keep people off Stony Silence, and no one would really be playing white for the hate cards. So they just decided to jam it. They got some new technology. I don't know if you heard about the new like play pattern with that deck, but they basically have some tricks involving Chromatic Star that allow them to sack all their stuff at once.
Right, I always say the card name incorrectly, but yeah. Ironworks doesn't use the stack to use its ability, so it's able to respond to things in a way that is kind of breaking the rules of magic.
Yes, faster than instant speed, or so to speak, like paying the cost speed.
So they're able to kind of do everything without their opponent ever being able to respond.
Exactly.
And so they're really resistant to kind of instant speed hate against their deck, and so that allows them to go off and... Without that, I think that, you know, figuring that out really helped. And Stony Silence being really soft this last weekend, because of what you said, made it kind of uniquely positioned. We always love when these types of decks kind of happen, where like, oh, none of these cards are new. Every single one of these cards has been legal and modern for almost its entire history. You know, it happened with Death Shadow Jund and Death Shadow Grixis, where it was like, oh, this is just better than the Death Shadow decks we were playing, or Jund was. Why didn't we figure this out before? It happened with Summer Bloom decks. It happened with Lantern Control.
Yeah.
And all of them are just like, oh, all these bad cards together are good.
Yeah.
It's kind of the best thing about Modern.
I love it too.
So before we get into what deck you played and the deck tech on that and then your GP report, we have some shout outs and as listeners of the podcast know, we used to do all the shout outs at once. Now we spread them out through the episode because we'll have the little segments, but to do the first ones, make sure to follow us on Twitter. We are at the MMCast. I am at Kess Wiley. Ben is at Ben Bateman Media, and
you can find me at Heidi Ho Gaming on Twitter.
Perfect. You can also make sure to check out our Patreon. It's how we pay for all the stuff. If you go to Patreon and search the MMCast or Masters of Modern, you'll check that out. We really appreciate all your help. So with that and those two first shout-outs, let's get into the deck tech. What deck did you play?
I chose to play Red-Green Eldrazi, which had already won a Modern GP not too long ago, played by Gregor Kowalski over in Europe. I'm not sure exactly which city the GP was in, but his version of the deck played all the same cards I was playing, which is basically the most of the busted Eldrazi creatures, Mattery Shaper, Thought Not Seer, Reality Smasher. But he was playing three main deck Scavenging Ooze, one main deck Birds of Paradise, and two Endbringers in the main. I swapped out four of those cards and played the latest busted red-green creature ye olde Bloodbraid Elf. So
The good old Eldrazi Bloodbraid Elf combo.
Yes, yes. people did kind of think, you know, it kind of is just a pile of really efficient cards and two-for-ones and the best removal in Modern and Dismember and Lightning Bolt. But the deck definitely is a beatdown deck with Bloodbraid in there. You really attack for a ton of damage very quickly is how I found the deck to play. And Gregor's version of the build, he was trying to kind of play more like a Jund game. He's trying to win with Endbringer and a big Scavenging Ooze and kind of grind people out, whereas my version of the deck really just attacked for a ton of damage.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, that's kind of what happens when you put in a cascadey thing that cascades into 5/5s and 4/4s. And
yeah, exactly.
And things that are way bigger than they deserve to be.
Yeah, yes. And you're playing, you know, the full Noble Hierarchs for the busted starts of just having like a green Mox, basically. Mm-hmm. And then also you have the Eldrazi Temples in the deck that act as the modern City of Traders or whatever, if you will. That allows you to just get a way bigger guy than you're supposed to have way earlier than you should have it.
Sure. You are the second person at Heidi Ho to top eight anything with an Eldrazi deck, and specifically with Eldrazi Obligator. Is that correct?
That is correct. That is correct. There is a little bit of a lineage of using Eldrazi Obligator to do well at tournaments at Heidi Ho. It's quite funny.
So for those who don't know, Andrew Brown now works at Wizards.
Yep. Yep, he used to work for and manage Heidi Ho, and that was passed along down the line, and I do the same thing now. And so it is pretty funny. Our old boss actually messaged me that it's hilarious that Eldrazi Obligator has been the linking the linking creature between the two players.
Yeah, Heidi Ho Comics in Santa Monica is the place to get good at Magic.
I mean, being surrounded by cards and players all the time, it just helps immerse yourself in the game. And also there's a big supportive community there that I owe a huge thanks to. And we had a little party the other night for our weekly Modern night just to celebrate the victory. So,
yay.
Yeah, it was cool.
So how did you go about choosing?
So the way I ended up choosing the deck was I had played Eldrazi Tron almost exclusively in Modern leading up to the tournament, but I hadn't been playing that much Modern. And so Bloodbraid Elf and Jace got unbanned, and I hadn't really played enough reps with the new format to really feel comfortable. So I was going to lean on Eldrazi Tron and just play what I know, and I feel like that's the biggest strength you can have for a Modern, for choosing a Modern deck. However, friends of mine and the whole shop kind of like were telling me, you know, they didn't think it's a good weekend for Eldrazi Tron. Like, Death Shadow's on the decline, Chalice isn't as strong as it once was. Yeah. And so they were telling me just play all the busted Eldrazi cards that you'd play in Eldrazi Tron, but get Ancient Stirrings, Lightning Bolt, and Bloodbraid Elf, and a Noble Hierarch.
Yeah.
And what's the worst that can happen? I was between Eldrazi Tron and Titan Shift with Bloodbraid Elves in it, as like, if I had never talked to anybody else about what I would play, I would probably end up playing Titan Shift with Bloodbraid Elves. But after talking to a bunch of people, they all had tested the deck and they urged me to try it. And so I sleeved up the deck Thursday night, go drive out to Phoenix, 6-hour drive, and then arrive there and just start jamming basically leagues on Friday the day before, just to try and get comfortable with the deck. And I only lose one match the entire day, which was like 8 actual league matches, like that you pay an entry fee for, and then like 2 casual matches on the side. I only lost to Burn the entire day, and so I felt super comfortable after that.
Yeah
And so I just I was locked in at that point, decided, I agonized over a few more sideboard cards, and that was it. That was how I got there.
So would you say that red green Eldrazi is right now probably the best position due to the fact that it's taking advantage of the powerful cards in those colors than other Eldrazi decks that are out there? Or,
you know, I think it's hard. I think each of the Eldrazi deck variants, like blue-green Eldrazi, Bant Eldrazi, and red-green, and then colorless, I think they all kind of do something different. I think red-green is the most explosive and has the best top decks, shall we say.
Sure.
And people were talking about that at the tournament, that when Jund's everywhere and everyone's trying to get Hellbent and Jund's top-decking Bloodbraid Elf and you're not, you're probably going to lose. But my deck, I'm top decking Reality Smasher, Endbringer,
and Bloodbraid Elf.
Bloodbraid Elf, yeah. Matter Reshaper, you know, and the Act of Treason guy. Mm-hmm. And so it's very it's very conducive to just like
going over the top.
Yeah, going over the top and top decking well, which is great.
Plus, your deck is like extremely resilient to most of the major played removal in the format right now.
Yes.
Like most things are either they gain you value off of Bolt or are Bolt proof. You have a ton of Fatal Push proof things or things that gain you value regardless if they push your thing.
Yep.
And they have to work to push it. They need the fetch land to really get to you.
Yep.
And Path is good against you, but you have Reality Smasher and Thought Knotseer to kind of punch them on it. And Bloodbraid Elf is resilient to Path too because it buys, you know, you get a land and a creature thing and they get rid of your Bloodbraid Elf. And so with those kind of being the main things you're facing against in the format, how are people really going to be able to stop the beatdown? Classically.
It's really hard. It's like you know, a bunch of Wraths is bad for me and a bunch of like graveyard combo being everywhere. Like if I had played against Grizzle Shoal, a competent pilot, and they had drawn pretty well, I think, you know, that's a rough matchup for my deck.
You're not going to Eldrazi Obligator?
I mean, not on the turn to kill me. No. it'd be cool. But I think, you know, the other strength of the deck that really sold me is that I won a lot of post-board games because I can Ancient Stirrings for all these powerful colorless hate cards that are exist in Modern, you know, Relic, Cage, and Crumble to Dust, and there's another one, Engineered Explosives, are all just like super potent hate cards that some decks just can't beat.
So that's like an interesting conversation that keeps happening, and I obviously have my opinions on it, but I'm interested to hear yours. Is Ancient Stirrings is currently pretty easily stated the best cantrip in the format. I don't think anyone really disagrees with that statement. And you're nodding your head and giving a thumbs up. You're on a podcast. No one can see you.
I totally agree with that.
And, you know, people have said, is this card bannable? You know, that comes up. And that happens every time a deck does well. People want a card from it being banned, which is very reactionary. And I don't think Wizards would do that just from the perspective that I think a lot of decks just straight up die if you get rid of Ancient Stirrings.
I would agree.
Where are you at on the power level of Ancient Stirrings? Should it see more play in other decks? What's it doing in the format right now?
I think Ancient Stirrings is a necessary evil for a lot of decks to exist, like you said. I think what made it exacerbated is that Walking Ballista got printed for Tron, making Mono Green Tron even better. The fact that you can find that. They keep printing good cards that are colorless that happen to lie in the Ancient Stirrings, you know, bandwidth because the Ancient Stirrings just ends up finding it. And they don't think about that when they're printing Crumble to Dust or they're printing, you know, Walking Ballista. So I think, like, I think the card makes decks possible. And I think it's totally, totally fair to still exist. It's just some decks, like my deck, exploit it a little more than others. It makes my deck way more consistent than it maybe ought to be.
Sure.
I'm playing four Soul Lands, but, you know, with four Ancient Stirrings in the deck, I'm playing way more than that.
Did your deck play? You didn't play Urza-Tron as well, right?
It was not Urza-Tron at all. It was just Carpusen Forest and Groves and Cavern of Souls for colored sources. Yeah. So. I think Ancient Stirrings is a powerful card, and I think there might have been 12 copies of it in the top 8, if I'm remembering. I think Matt Nass played it. I can't quite remember.
Ancient Stirrings?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he did, but we can check on that.
Yeah,
but there was at least Tron, Mono Green Tron, and myself playing 4 copies of Ancient Stirrings. I'm trying to think of the other top 8 deck lists. I'm not sure. It would seem to me that it could fit into Crackle and Ironworks, but Matt Nass might have been playing it. Might not have been.
Jund? Ironworks combo is the one we're debating on.
Yeah.
It did play 4 Ancient Stirrings.
All right. So there were 12 copies of it in the top 8.
Yeah.
Which, you know, that's something definitely to note.
Bring the Light, Scapeshift did not.
Yeah, that makes sense.
This, I mean, so we'll get into the top 8 at the tail end. The last thing in this section of the podcast before we do more shout-outs is, so you mentioned you lost a burn. What and Grizzle Brand was something that you were afraid of. What would you say you're like, worst matchups are playing the deck?
You know, I would say out of the top 5 Modern decks, the one that I was scared of the most was probably Humans.
Okay.
They have a really fast clock and a very disruptive element that stops me from playing my traditional game. And if they ever cast a Reflector Mage against me, it is so hard to win.
Sure.
It is so hard. They like bounce my Thought Knotseer. They draw a card. I can't cast it again. And then, like, they have 3 Phantasmal Images on top of that to copy whatever. So it's a really hard matchup, and I had to play against it twice, which is, you know, I think what I should expect at a GP at least.
Were those your 2 losses for the tournament?
I actually beat one on day 1, and then I lost to it in the top 8,
And then what would you say some of your – so you'd say your Burr matchup is okay?
I would say my burn matchup is also terrible, but okay. I played the two Kitchen Finks and another Skooze in the sideboard to hopefully help alleviate the matchup a little bit.
Sure. And then what would you say your best matchups are?
My best matchups are any of the slower mid-range to late-game decks that are trying to either go over the top of me. Like, I felt like the Tron matches were pretty free for me. Mm-hmm. And then I also felt like Jund did not do very well against me. I even think I played against a couple Storm opponents, and they all felt like I was favored, which does not seem intuitive. Huh. Because my clock is so fast.
Sure.
And that I have a lot of removal for their mana guys, their mana dorks, mm-hmm. in Baral and Goblin Electromancer. And I can find my hate pieces so easily. So
yeah, that makes sense. It makes sense that like Storm is really good at capitalizing on someone that takes longer than turn four to kill them, and if they can do that and then survive the interaction they're playing, they're going to capitalize on it. But if they can't and someone kills them quicker than they go off,
exactly, I'm not giving them any turns.
Right. Yeah. Awesome. Okay. So before we get into a full on GP tournament report. I also want to throw out more shout outs because that's how this works now. Make sure to check out the Command Zone, our sister podcast. They also have a show called Game Nights, which is them playing. It's like a full on production, camera crews, editors, Magic the Gathering gameplay on YouTube. Go check it out right now. It's all at collected.company. And cool. All right. Now we're going to talk about the GP report. You kind of talked about your GP method before getting in there, which is just pick a deck at random.
No. To be fair, I'd played Red Green Eldrazi during Eldrazi Winter with Eye of Ugin in it. And I was playing like Kozilek's Returns and Worldbreakers. And that deck was really busted.
Right.
This deck is trying to emulate that as best as possible, but in a more fair way.
Okay.
Just no Eye of Ugin.
And then, so do you have any like pre-GP good luck charm habits, like drink a lot of water beforehand?
I have like in between round habits, and I have a crew of people that I travel to GPs with that we always arrange stay and have like a supportive group together. Mm-hmm. And that really helps, having a group to like bounce ideas off of, and they can support you and you can support them, just in case you're feeling doubtful or if you're not sure about a card choice, they can give you ideas. That really helps. The other thing I do is I do drink a ton of water on the day of the GP. I also always bring like a giant jar of just like mixed nuts that I have with me at all times, so I'm just snacking throughout the day. That's like my only rituals.
Those are both really good. I mean, we had an episode of like health before a GP or during a tournament, and like basically the big takeaway was drink as much water as possible. That's probably true in life. The more water you drink, the better off you're going to be.
Hydration is super important.
Nuts are definitely one of the best, kind of like through a consistent snack that's not like pizza or all the other kind of crud that they have at a convention hall. It's something that's going to be a little bit healthier and keep energy going.
Yep.
Okay, so day one, what's your first matchup? How's it go?
It is Blood Moon Tooth and Nail, which is terrible for me, actually. It is not good if he ever goes turn two or turn three, or turn three, really, Blood Moon. So I luck out. He, unfortunately, it's his first GP. He's won a last chance qualifier, which means he has two buys, but he earned them the day before on Friday.
Sure.
But he draws eight cards on accident.
Oh.
And the ruling for this is you can go to six, and that's fine. Like, you get to six and a scry. It's close to seven anyway. Or you can let your opponent look at your hand and choose a card to take from it.
Oh.
He opts to let me do that, which I don't recommend to anybody. And so, but what he didn't realize, I think he thought it was a Thoughtseize, that I could take a non-land card. I could take any card.
Sure.
So he had two forests, and he was on the, I believe he was on the play. So I took a forest, and he didn't draw a second land.
Oh, that's
brutal.
So
that was unfortunate for him. He had like two, we actually had a game of it because he had two of the, I think it's Utopia Sprawl, the one mana enchantment. But anyways, he loses that game, and then.
So was that more of a Ponza deck then? That was a
It was
red green
not
Ponza?
Ponza. Oh, okay. It was Tooth and Nail. He,
Crafter's like Cage
does
into
nothing either. He just tries to get you with Emrakul and Xenagos. He also had Tireless Trackers and Obstinate Bailouts to grind. He got me game two with Kessig Wolfrun on a giant tracker. And then game three, I killed him with just giant Eldrazi before he could set up anything.
Cool. Got it.
Yeah. And then so the next round was Serum Powder Eldrazi.
Okay.
Which was kind of crazy. We also went to game three. He did some cool things where he went to six and then went to six three times by mulliganing a couple times. So he really drew two cards because he exiled two of the
Serum.
The Scourge or whatever it's called. The guy that gets exiled and you can cast it for three from exile. And
That's crazy.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. So he mulliganed a six but really had eight cards in hand because he had the two. Scourge is the name. In exile. It was pretty cool. Their games were super close. And he can sometimes be more explosive than me in that he has four mimics that he can make really big.
Sure, yeah,
and
yeah.
And then blast me with. But I won that
it's
one.
The more, it's the version of the deck that is easy to interact, easier to stop, but can be more explosive if
exactly.
they stumble.
Exactly. And Bloodbraid Elves really came in handy in that matchup in that I was able to cascade into Bolt and kill some of his smaller guys. I was at one life game three and barely won that one. The next round was Mono Green Tron. This match, I can only sum up, and he cast Ulamog against me. I still had six mana. I Bloodbraid Elfed, got hit Obligator off the cascade, and had the colorless to pay to steal his Ulamog and killed him with it. And that's how that match went.
Brutal.
Yeah, and also games two and three against Tron just feels so easy because you board in the artifact destruction.
Sure.
And you can kill their O-Stone in Expedition map with Natural State or Ancient Grudge, and they just have a hard time setting up. Then it was Jund, round six, and I don't have any memories of this match other than he played some smaller guys than me. A lot of my matchups end up playing like this. They played smaller guys than me, and I just killed them and then killed them with my gigantic
bigger
guys.
Yeah.
And they just don't really have a chance. It feels pretty unfair a lot of the time. Then round seven was Hollowon against Max McVitie, and that was a very close match. He kept Goblin Loring and Burning Inquiring me. Notably, he Burning Inquired me game one, and I discarded all my lands. And so that was a rough one. I just said go, and it was not nice. But he won game one. And then I was able to cage and relic him out of the next games two and three.
Okay.
And
would
then,
would you say,
yeah,
because you mentioned that graveyard decks are kind of difficult for you to interact with.
It is.
They are. Because Hollow One went from being nowhere to everywhere.
Yeah.
And it's kind of the same as what Prize Amalgam did for Jund, where it's just like, oh, free 4/4s and 3/3s is really good.
Yeah.
Because they're also kind of the other beefy guy in the room. How difficult is that matchup for you? And is there any specific things you'd keep in mind while playing against it?
Yeah, I think the matchup can be difficult depending on how explosive their start is. Generally, if you know you want to hope to line up your Dismember against one of their bigger guys early. I luckily did that. I was able to Dismember a Fish and Dismember a Hollow One during our matches. But generally, I would say chump blocking is favored for you just because you're eventually going to have giant guys too, and they don't really have ways to grind other than keep bringing back Blood Gas or Flame Wake Phoenix, and they don't really want to block with either of those.
Sure.
So, well, one can't. But basically, you end up you chump block until you end up racing, and your deck's really good at racing with four Bolt and a bunch of haste threats.
Right.
It's also
Eldrazi
Obligator's great against them.
Yeah.
If you ever draw that card, so if you buy some time, I think you might end up being actually favored in the matchup.
Okay.
So yeah, that's Hollow One, and then round eight. So I was 7-0. I had beaten. That is the best. Being 7-0 already, I was the best I've ever done in any GP. And then I go up the last round. It's against Zan Syed on humans. He's a very good player and has been playing humans a lot. But he cast some cards against me that I had never expected to face in Modern. One was Yisan the Wandering Bard.
Oh, sick.
Which was insane. I was like, I read the card. I mean, I know what it did from Commander. And then I read it and I was like, oh my God, this is great in his deck.
Mm-hmm.
He goes and finds basically, and it's like
Burning
Pod.
If you don't kill it, you lose.
Yeah, it was crazy. Luckily,
is it? I forget if it's any.
I believe it's creature CMC. I believe it's creature CMC. You pay two and a green. It's a 2/3 human rogue, and you pay two and a green and tap it to go find a creature. You put a verse counter on them. You go find a creature equal to the number of verse counters in CMC and put it onto the battlefield. It could be power, but I'm pretty sure it's CMC.
No, yeah, it's put a verse counter on Yisan the Wandering Bard, search your library for a creature card with converted mana cost equal to the number of verse counters on Yisan, put it onto the battlefield, then shuffle your library. He is a 2/3 human rogue, legendary creature.
So it goes. They find
Sick.
Champion of the Parish, and then they go find Thalia's Lieutenant, and then they go find Mantis Rider, and then they go find the other card that he played against me, which was Hostage Taker, which was messed up because in the board he had boarded into Selfless Spirit against me to save his guys from Lightning Bolt or Anger, I believe.
Well, that's it's crazy how now Wizards needs, kind of like how they like have now started paying attention to equipment or other things that there are like older cards that they need to be maybe worried about breaking. Like every human they print is super relevant now.
It is true. It's absolutely true. Kitesail Freebooter really made the deck.
Yeah,
you know,
like a real thing.
What it is, yeah. And unclaimed territory. It felt really bad game one. I think the matchup's terrible. I punted game one as well. Didn't feel great about it. I should have attacked with an obligator to hit him just for four and maybe trade with a reflector mage. Mm-hmm. But didn't win that one. And then games two and three, I just kind of drew enough removal to stabilize. And then my guys were just bigger than his guys, as the deck tends to play out. Reality Smasher is a hell of a card. And killed him. And he had Selfless Spirits out and a Hostage Taker stealing my, I think, Thought Not Seer. And so, but I had the Dismember to go through the Selfless Spirit protection of indestructibility. And that's how I went 8-0. And
you 8-0 day one at a GP.
Yeah,
how's
man.
It feel?
It felt great. And all my friends are just, you know, one match at a time. You just got to go 1-0 yeah. each time. And that's what I did.
How do you feel about what was probably the best? Your favorite matchup of the day?
On day one, it was definitely, the highlight was for sure stealing Ulamog
yeah.
with an obligator.
Coolest moment and coolest
the cascade.
Matchup.
Yeah, it was absurd.
Sweet.
Once that happened, I was like, I know you have to run well to do well at GPs, and I was running well at that point.
Yeah. So day two, what did you do after day one? How do you get ready for the second day? You're probably exhausted at that point.
I was exhausted. I did not get enough sleep. I recommend to everybody getting a full night's rest for GPs. I unfortunately did not. And what we did was we went and got food at a really nice pizza place out in Phoenix. I think it's called Pizzeria Bianca. Really, really good restaurant. And then we just relaxed in our hotel at the Sheraton next door and just hung out and took it easy, and everyone was congratulating me on, because the deck was a combined, I think we had four losses between three of us. I was 8-0,
oh, wow.
Another guy was 7-1, and another guy ended up X2. So it was pretty nice.
That's awesome.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So
that was what we did after day one.
Day two, you wake up, you're not rested.
I'm not very well rested.
Eight
I was pretty nervous.
You got a day of matches ahead of you.
Yep.
What's your first match? How's it go?
First thing, coffee before anything else.
Okay.
Every time. The first match was against a fellow SoCal grinder. His name's Tyler Horsepool. He's a really nice guy, but he was on Storm. He was also 8-0. So
yeah, that makes sense. You're 8-0.
Yeah,
he's 8-0.
So I lose the die roll, and he goes off turn three against me. He plays Goblin Electromancer, and he has one mana left over and goes off, and I lose. I was very impressed. That's a good hand from Storm. And then games two and three. Games two, he mulliganed to four. Storm with 17 lands can mulligan a little bit more than it used to, and the deck doesn't mulligan that well. And then game three, I Relic and Cage him, and he has a hard time winning. He makes a really cool play, though. I don't know if we have time to mention individual plays, but
sure. We got time.
Cool. He casts Pass in Flames, and I have Relic out, and I think for a while, his graveyard's pretty full of spells he's cast so far, just cantrips and stuff and a few rituals, and I exile the graveyard in response to the ritual, and he has two mana left over, but no Baral or Electromancer, and what he ends up doing is he goes off a little bit in response to me exiling everything with Relic. He goes ritual, Manamorphose. He lets the Relic resolve, and then he goes ritual, Manamorphose, and has more stuff in the graveyard to flashback and almost goes off just off that. What I should have done is waited for the first ritual and then exile it in response so that he didn't have enough mana to keep casting stuff from his hand.
Sure.
But that was my mistake. And luckily he did not get to go off, but that was a close call. So I ended up winning that one. And that was 9-0. And then I was at table one and played against Affinity, which went to three games. Nothing really remarkable other than, you know, I drew my removal in game two. I lost game one pretty easily, drew my removal in game two and just hit him really hard. And then game three, I keep an interesting hand on the draw against Affinity. It's Grove, Bolt, and Noble Hierarch. And then like three creatures that are like Mattery Shaper or something else. And, you know, people thought it was pretty close on the mulligan keep, mm-hmm. The philosophy. I kept, other people might have mulliganed just because I have cards like Natural State, Ancient Grudge, and Engineered Explosives, which are perhaps a little more powerful than mulligan too. But I lost that one. That was round 10.
So interesting. So a tournament that everyone thought Affinity was bad before.
Yeah.
Was eight. Well, and that's how Affinity works. Is everyone yeah. forgets Affinity will be good. So yeah. It's good. But so it went 10-0 then.
It did go 10-0. I know that guy finished. I think his name's Shane. He finished 12-3.
Okay.
So he did very well, and there were a couple other Affinity players towards the top. It's just basically how much do you think you can beat Jund with Affinity?
Correct.
Like if you think they're not playing Stonian, like 1-2K commands isn't enough, or and all the bolts and abrupt decays. If you think you can get past that with say Etch Champion, and you can play well enough, then yeah, pick up the deck and play it. There was definitely very little Stony Silence, so that's great for the deck.
Well, except. Yeah, KCI just updated.
That is true. Things might change now. And then round 11, mm-hmm. I played against Green White Hate Bears, which I thought was Kiki Korb when I played against it because I didn't know.
Sure.
I didn't see Aether Vial until the last game, but he was basically a Green White. He made top eight, and he was a Green White Hate Bear beatdown deck. He's playing mm-hmm. Restoration Angel, Flicker Wisp, Voice of Resurgence, and then all the Hate Bears. Thalia.
This was.
Tate
Donovan.
Donovan, yeah. Really nice guy and really crisp play. And
Crusader.
Land Destruction is also something my deck has a hard time with. So even when they're ghost courting your temple or ghost courting your mm-hmm. colored sources, it's a rough time. So I lost there.
Did you play a waste?
Say it again.
Did you play one waste or not?
I did not.
Oh.
I did not.
Would you maybe play a waste in the future knowing Blood Moons and...
You know, I thought about it. My hedge about that was if Field of Ruin becomes the most popular card in Modern, I think you for sure play a waste.
Yeah.
If it doesn't...
Which I think it's becoming.
Yeah, it's a great card.
It's a $4 uncommon.
Yeah, it's a great card. Yeah. I was thinking that the Mind Stones would be enough to get me colorless through
okay.
Blood Moon, and that's why I didn't play Wastes. I wanted to at least have a basic to search for that was green so I could find Ancient Stirrings.
Sure.
But yeah, that was round 11. I lost easily 0-2 to
sure.
Hate Bears.
Okay.
Round 12 was another Hollow One player, and it went almost identically. They did not win game one. I just chump blocked enough to stabilize and then killed him before he could... because they don't really have that much of a late game.
Mm-hmm.
And then game two, I just caged and relic'd him out, and he couldn't really
sure.
do anything. The next round, so that's me. I started off the day 1-2, and then one against Hollow One, which felt good. So at that point, I am, let's see, 8-0.
I'm
10-2, yeah.
You lost two.
I've lost two. What I lost to Affinity, and I lost to Hate Bears.
Oh, Hate Bears, correct.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then I play against Mono Green Tron again. This time it goes almost identically. My opponent unfortunately makes a mistake and he pluses Karn when he should have killed one of my 2-3 powered threats on the board.
Okay.
And he was at 9. So instead of that, I attack him for 6, ignore the Karn. Yeah, and then he didn't draw a removal spell for the other one and he just died when he was at 3 life to an obligator. So and then game 2, I just artifact destruction, kill his map, kill his O-Stone, kill him. That was a win. And then round 14 was my first feature match ever against Kiki Kord.
Mm-hmm.
That was pretty nerve-wracking. It came down to game 3. He kept a one lander with a bird, and I killed the bird. Always bolt the bird. And it worked out. He didn't draw second land for one turn, but then he did, and we had a game of it. But Triple Thought Knot into Reality Smasher tends to win most games, and that's how that went. And then I was, I believe... let's see. What was my record? I was 12-2 at that point.
So now you're 13-2 because you were 12-2.
No, I was 12-2 after beating Kiki Korb, but I was okay. in the unique situation of having the best breakers in the room, and I was at table 2 in the pairings for round 15,
okay.
which means I was able to ID and be locked for 8th place.
Okay, so you at that point just...
I just intentionally drew in when got lunch and was ready for top 8 and was super happy, super relieved that I could draw into top 8. It was so nerve-wracking to know you have a win in for something that you've been trying to qualify for the Pro Tour. I was really happy to be able to draw. I was very relieved. I was also pretty tired at this point.
Yeah, yeah.
So...
All right. So before we get into the top 8, last bit of shout outs.
Yes.
One, we have a Facebook group. You guys should all go to it. It's where all of the modern conversations are happening. Hagen Kirk is the main moderator there. He does a great job. We're there as well. If you have a cool deck idea or you want to get some advice on a deck you've been playing, it's a great place to post information to get some good feedback. Ben has brought back 10 minutes of Magic. So he was doing it on the Anchor app. The Anchor app has decided to move away from Magic, and he's doing a movie show for them. So if you want to see Nerds in Suits movie reviews, go to Anchor. But if you want to to get 10 minutes of Magic or 10 minutes of Modern, go to the Wizardry Foundry page. We also post it to the Facebook page, so either of those places you'll get it. He does 10 minutes every day of Magic content. Go check it out. It's awesome. And last but not least, check out Kess.co. It's a website. It's the website for the company that I started. We have games and spring-summer toys. Super Party Battle is the main game we launched right there. You can buy it right now on Amazon. Or you can check out all the balls and hoops and other stuff that we have there, which are really cool. And now, finally, you've reached a top 8 at a GP. You've worked your ass off playing Magic for the last X amount of years, and you've now achieved kind of the first step to professional play. How's it feel?
It feels great. I am kind of in a surreal mindset and just like thinking, I felt like at the time, you know, you expect to have done something special or something different or some kind of insight before you get hit your success like milestone. And I didn't do anything different. You know what I'm saying? I just played the exact same Magic that I usually play, and things just kind of broke my way a little more. Mm-hmm. And I chose a good deck for the weekend and played a format I was comfortable playing and cards I was comfortable playing. And it just ended up working out for me. And it felt great. It felt like I was at the top 8 of like a PPTQ, like a 30-man tournament. I was just like, oh, I can ID. Oh, all right. I'll just, you know, I'm in the top 8 of like a 30-man tournament, except this is a, you know, 1,400-man tournament approximately. Yeah. So
remember when like 1,400 GP-sized GPs was like unheard of? And it was just like, oh, man, it was huge. There were 700 people there. Yeah. Magic has grown. It's great.
Magic has grown. Modern is popular.
It is popular. That's the best part of it. In the last 3 years, Modern has become, I believe, the most popular professional format.
Absolutely,
and,
I think.
You know, Commander has become the most popular format. And part of this is just Standard has been the problematic format it has. And obviously, they're putting a lot of work to kind of overcome that. But because of that, and because just, I think, you know, the other half of it is the new player influx into Magic hasn't grown as much. While that huge leap, all of those people have, because, you know, the Magic path is a lot of like, oh, you start with casual decks and you maybe draft some, and then you get enough cards to have a bad Standard deck, and then you're like, oh, I'm going to invest in a good Standard deck, or like the rotation happens, you're like, oh man, I've been playing Magic for this entire Standard, so now I like actually have been drafting all these formats, so I have a collection to build a real Standard deck. I'm going to do it, and then you invest in it, and then it rotates, and you're like, damn it.
That's the cycle that happened to me.
And well, all these cards, I guess I have these four Thoughtseizes that I got in Theros, or I have these five, all these Eldrazi cards that just rotated, or I have Liliana of the Last Hopes and Emrakul's and stuff. What deck can I invest in that still uses these expensive cards? Like, well, Modern.
Exactly.
And then you get into that and you start grinding, and then one day you top 8 a GP.
It's been crazy. And fortunately, they break the power level of Standard enough times recently that some of the cards you play in Standard will make it into Modern, either the Eldrazi, Felidar, Guardian, Saheeli.
Right.
You know, there's just been enough cards that have made their way into Modern from Standard that you can easily transport
your way. Oh, almost every
set.
I mean, we do set reviews. Every set that comes out, and almost every single time, like, it consistently, there are cards from every set that are a big deal in Modern.
Absolutely.
Even you know, Ixalan, Kaitsu Freebooter.
Oh,
Kaitsu
Freebooter
has won multiple GPs.
Yeah, and the guy that won the GP that I lost to in Top 8, which we'll get to in a second, he was running a main deck Direfleet Daredevil. Yeah, spoilers. Sorry, guys. He was running a main deck Direfleet Daredevil, which is, you know, right from Rivals.
I mean, look at, like, Shadows Over Innistrad block. Like, we did, like, a poll of, like, what sets were the most influential or blocks of the last 5 years, and, like, Shadows Over Innistrad is crazy high.
Yeah.
You have Prize of Maelstrom. You have Grimflayer. You have Liliana.
Draven Inspector.
You have, there's, like, crazy things that are coming out in every Standard set. So, like, they are doing a good job of printing new, interesting, powerful things to come out. And Dominaria is going to do the same.
I'm much more from the school of thought. I'd rather them take risks and make interesting cards than be too safe and make boring cards. So,
so you're getting into your GP.
Yes.
This is, you know, you're seated 8th.
Yep.
Because of the ID. You're against Stephen Locke, who's playing humans.
Yep,
Your worst matchup.
You
beat
terrible.
It once. You beat it once so far.
Okay. Very luckily.
So your other loss is also Green White Hate. Luckily, you didn't play against Tate because you already lost to him. So you know it's a bad matchup. So you have a chance.
Yep.
You're running hot. How's it go?
It feels good. I know Stephen Locke from Minneapolis. I was also at Minneapolis where he went undefeated in matches. Mm-hmm. He did not lose a match in Minneapolis, winning with Mono Black Zombies. I happen to know this. And he did not have any buys. So he went 16-0 the hard way at that tournament. And that was absurd. And so I know this guy's really good. I have never been in a feature match area before. Like, this is my second time ever in the same tournament. I'm a little bit nervous and a little bit tired, but I, you know, I'm just going to keep playing the same old thing. I need to go best of one. I know the match is still for pretty high stakes. You know, there's a lot of cash on the line and pro points on the line for every match in the top eight. So I took it as seriously as I could. And game one, he had a reasonable hand of, I think, like champion, kite sail, freebooter, meddling mage. And I had a hand of two lands, ancient stirring, skews, I think one bolt and one dismember, or maybe just a dismember, and a bunch of matter reshapers, if I didn't already say that. He kite sails, freebooters me. I kill it in response so that he can still see my hand, but he doesn't take anything. I ancient stirrings, I whiff on ancient stirring, which is really hard to do in my deck.
That's rough.
Yeah, I'm looking for a land or anything.
Just like blood right elf.
I think I got a matter. I needed a land, and I whiff on a land, okay. I should say. So I got a matter reshaper, but he had already seen my hand, and I have to reveal it off ancient stirrings. So the next thing he does is name matter reshaper with meddling mage, and he basically him to Turox me for three unless I can kill that meddling mage. So it was really rough. I did not win that game. Game two, we had a really, really close one. I could not get him dead with Keswick Wolf run out. I had a bunch of Thought Not Seers, and he had a bunch of humans and a Mantis Rider, and I could not quite get in for lethal. And that's part of the downside of the deck is Grove sometimes gives your opponent's life.
Yeah.
And you have to tap it because you're going to die if you tap Carpalusian Forests. You're generally, they're the beatdown in this matchup. So you really want to give them life because you're the inevitability. And so it was a really hard, tough spot on how I tap my man. I might have been able to maneuver things a little better and be able to get him with Wolf Run. But in either case, they were close games, and I was just totally happy to be there. I was not upset at all to lose. He was a great opponent, and I hope
top eight's crazy. Yeah,
yeah, man. I was super excited. I wish, of course, I could have won, but he played well, and I was just ecstatic. So
let's look at you lost the top eight.
Yeah.
You made it though. Yeah. Seven pro points.
I am locked for seven. I get four for the tournament, and then I get three for just showing up to Richmond, Virginia for Pro Tour Dominaria. Okay. So I'm locked for seven.
And PT Dominaria is what format?
It is, I believe, standard. Okay. Standard Dominaria, standard, all the way from Kaladesh, all the way to Dominaria.
Yep.
And then Dominaria draft as well.
Okay. So the top eight, we got, it's crazy. This is the second tournament, I think.
For Modern
that has had.
At least the second. I think it might even be more where they've had individual eight unique decks.
Yeah. I mean, in modern history for sure, but like recently it's the second.
Recent memory, I think it's at least the second too.
And everyone walked into the format with, two Jace decks, two Bloodbraid Elf decks. So both cards showed up in the top eight.
Yep.
Knowing that this is the top eight that you would have been facing, is there any changes you would have made to your deck ahead of time? Or, walking out of the tournament, are there things that you would have done differently with your deck?
Yeah, I think Kitchen Finks, while it was a fine choice, it's really Matter Reshapers 5 and 6 for my deck. I think I would have been better off with a higher impact card. There isn't a colorless card that really does what I want, in that I would love a colorless Anger of the Gods. But they did have Cold Zilix Return.
Yeah.
But that doesn't kill Mantis Rider, and it doesn't kill some of the other key cards in the deck if it gets big off Thalia's Lieutenant. So mainly for humans, you can play another Dismember in the board. You can play a Cold Zilix Return and hope you hit it early enough. That was the main thing I was worried about, is like these go wide creature decks that had resilient threats that were faster than me. I felt like I didn't have enough game against them. I was like hoping to draw Bolt, Yeah.
Could you just play Anger of the Gods?
I could. Double color is a little hard for the deck. I am a three color deck full and through and through. I have a hard time. Many times during the weekend, I had to name Oof with Cavern of Souls just to get double green to cast Kitchen Finks. That was probably the hardest part of the deck, actually, was tapping your mana. It was very hard sometimes to figure out how to sequence stuff. I would say I would maybe add a couple Angers and maybe one more Dismember.
Like a split of Anger and Kozilek Return, maybe?
Yeah, that could work. You could find it off Ancient Stirrings, which is really nice. Yeah. I could see a split. I can see Kitchen Finks was just... I've been still talking to people about the deck because I feel unresolved about it. There are things I would like to change. The one Endbringer, one Skooze, I think is totally interchangeable. You can change it to whatever you feel like is good for that weekend. And I think the card that I often boarded out the most was either Matter Reshaper or Eldrazi Obligator, depending on the matchup.
Sure.
On the draw, Obligator wasn't as good. And then Matter Shaper, if it just didn't do anything and just was a 3-2, yep. it just wasn't good
well,
enough.
Well, yeah, I mean, both of those cards, you do this a lot. I did this a lot when I was playing blue-white straight control.
Yeah.
And you play main deck Remands. But main deck Remand, when you're playing straight up control, a lot of the time is just mediocre. But yep. it's mediocre against everyone versus yep. other cards that are bad or good against other people. So yep. you kind of hedge your bets with your main deck and make it so you're playing a 75% of a card.
Exactly.
That's like fine. And it's yes. going to be good always. It's yes. just it's not going to be great. And then
exactly.
as soon as you get in your match two, you're like, okay, we know that Remand is no longer the best thing I can play playing because they're on Storm, so I know I need these cards that are good against Storm, or they're on this other, you know, you can bring in your hate cards. And
you know, it's funny, I've played a lot of Modern and a lot of different decks in Modern, and this reminds me of Elvish Visionary and Elves, where it's like, this card isn't great, but it's what I always board out for the cards that are great.
Right.
And so
right.
Matter Shaper is kind of like that in this deck. I just like, well, I'm going to board in these really, really impactful sideboard cards. I'm going to get rid of this guy, yep. like a little 3-2.
And like, it's almost, every time I've ever had that situation, I feel like I've done better in a tournament, and that's And partly, I feel like it's just from an exhaustion perspective. Every yes. match, I'm thinking less.
Yes.
Like, oh, I already know what I have to sideboard out. Because it's always yep. harder for me to pick take stuff out than to put, like, oh,
yep.
these 12 cards are great against this opponent.
Yep.
But I'm not taking 12 cards out of my deck. How do I deal with this? And
exactly.
when you're like, oh, get out of these Elvish Visionaries. Get rid of these Remands. Get rid of these Obligators. It's a lot easier to kind of just, from a mental fatigue perspective,
absolutely.
Continue in the game.
And the sideboard's really streamlined with a lot of two of. So it, I felt another draw to the deck was how easy it was to sideboard
sure.
with it. So
Now, just let's look at the top eight. I mean, Humans won, wins.
Yep.
Humans obviously is the newest deck of the year.
Yep.
Jund now being the cemented biggest winner from the unbanning, it looks like. I mean, I think... we'll see. And Jace is a card that I think takes a longer time to figure out versus Bloodbraid Elf, which is just like jam for Bloodbraid Elf.
Definitely agree with that. Yeah.
I mean, they, you know, they kind of said it. It took in standard, Cobblade almost was a Lantern Control, Summer Bloom, Grixis Delver, KCI type of deck where mm-hmm. all those cards, like, yes, Sword of Feast of Fingerment came out, but the engine of Bloodbraid Elf. Not Bloodbraid Elf.
Chase the Mind Sculptor.
Chase the Mind Sculptor with, you know, all Squadron
Hawk
was available.
Yep.
And some people played it, but no one really realized it was good until it, like, actually did well.
Yeah.
And, you know, Jace is a card that takes longer to figure out what the best deck is for.
Yeah.
Versus Bloodbraid Elf, which during that same standard period, people's yeah. biggest complaint was no one thinks who's playing Jund. It's too easy of a deck to do well because you just jam a Lightning Bolt into a Putrid Imp, Putrid Leech,
yep.
into a Blightning, into a Bloodbraid Elf that cascades into another Blightning and you win.
Right.
Good right. job not thinking about your matchup.
Exactly.
So, you know, just, and you played it in this tournament, you just jammed for Bloodbraid Elf.
Yep. And the card is absurd. It's really good. But I think if I had to guess the best home for Jace right now, I think it's some kind of Blue Moon variant, either Through the Breach or not, and mm-hmm. then Bring the Light, Scapeshift. Those two decks seem to really,
take
really appreciate Jace.
Well,
yeah,
Bring the Light or Scapeshift decks in general have always just needed one good semi-expensive dig card.
Yep.
Where before it was the best time Scapeshift had in Modern was during the Delve area when they had
dig through time. Oh man.
And Ooh. And they got rid of Dig 2 Time, and they're like, oh, I have no way to dig for the thing I need to get to.
Exactly.
And Bring the Light kind of helped because you have a yep. second copy of Scapeshift, but Bring the Light is clunky and a 5-drop. And
it is.
But having Jace in the deck and Jace offering that alternative game plan that Jace does offer to every
Absolutely.
Deck it's in
yep.
really is feels really strong in Scapeshift. I agree.
Yeah.
Which, you know, got fifth place.
Yeah, that guy was super good. I think he was playing all the basics in his deck, too. He was playing
one
the
each.
White version with Supreme Verdict, and I think he had one, at least one of each.
He had
a Plains.
One Plains, two. He did not have a Swamp.
Okay, yeah, but I think he was playing no black.
One Plains, two Mountains, three Islands, two Forests.
But I saw him play against Blood Moon decks, and he just fetched every basic.
Oh, yeah.
I was super
yeah,
impressed.
Yeah, through the entire
I
thing,
like,
I was like,
that
great.
Deck's so, you know, tight on slots.
Which makes sense, because it has the mana ramp to be able to do it. The fact that you're playing two Farseek and...
Sakura Tribe Elder
yeah. and Search for Tomorrow.
Yeah,
all of those, just like, every Blood Moon opponent, you're like, oh, Blood Moon should be good against Scapeshift. You're like, oh, no, if they get a Forest, they just can't lose.
Exactly. Exactly. It's strange.
Because they get, you know, they need three islands so they can Cryptic Command yeah. things and the Cryptic Command your Blood Moon and then they
yeah.
win.
Yeah. And that guy's a master, by the way. That guy had played that deck for such a long time.
Oh, yeah.
Until this tournament.
I love decks that are more one-ofs than two-ofs or four-ofs or three-ofs where it's like, you obviously have played this enough times. You're like, you know what? I need exactly one Snapcaster Mage. I don't need more than that. I don't need less than that. I need exactly one.
Yeah.
You're like, okay.
Yep.
So then after Scapeshift, we have Ironworks combo, which Matt Ness said, and it just was the right time for it. This is its moment.
That's how he explained it, is that it did really well in their leagues, and Stoning Silence was at a low, and you know, they even have four Nature's Claims in the side anyway. So they thought the deck was really good and well-positioned, and they ran with it. A lot of people did well with that deck. Matt Ness just happens to be the guy that top-baited. And he's great with combo anyway. So
Collected Company back with Nightfall.
Yeah. Now, I didn't take too close of a look at that deck. Is that the one that has, like, everything in it? It's got, like, the Retreat to Coral Helm, Knight of the Reliquary, and Devoted Druid.
It's got Knight of the Reliquary, it's got Retreat to Coral Helm, it's got Devoted Druid, it's got Ballista combo, it's got E-Witness, it's got Reflector Mage and Spell Quellers to go off. It has Jace in the deck. Kessel Wolf from you need Kessel Wolf from the go off. Yeah, it literally just is like every it's the new Birthing Pod deck.
Yeah,
as far as I can tell. This is just it's Counters Company, except they figured out that by playing Knight of the Reliquary your deck is better.
Yes. I think it's a great deck as well. I was happy not to play it against it again. I played against humans, but it also has Reflector Mage, which is not great for me. And Spell Queller, let me think. No, it doesn't stop the Cascade from Bloodbraid, so it's not the end of the world. But
you get one half.
Yeah, you get one half.
Yeah, yeah. You get one half.
Yeah, you get one half. That deck seems also super spicy, and I know he's been playing that deck a ton.
Well, there's like Cord Coco decks,
yeah,
and before that, Birthing Pod decks have always just been famous for playing all of your creatures are good by themselves, but then accidentally go infinite.
Yes, yes.
So it's like you have no problem playing Devoted Druids and Dusk Watch Recruiters and Knight of the Reliquaries because all those cards are just good.
Yep,
they're
good value pieces.
They're beaters. They gain value when they come into play. They help you ramp. They kind of do a little bit of everything.
Yeah.
And then if you happen to get two of them and you then Cord or Collected Company, you win. And so the deck just is doing that game plan really strong. It's not surprising to me that there's always just going to be a Collected Company. Really a Court of Calling creature deck that's going
to
be good.
And throw two Jaces in there. Why not?
Yeah. I mean,
it's like, you know, get to grind, get to bounce creatures. You get to bounce your own creatures. You get to do whatever you need to do with Jace. The card's pretty good. That deck seems super, super hard to play and also really grindy.
Yep. And there's a mono green Tron opponent, which I'm assuming you wished you played.
Yes, I wish I had played against it. But he lost to Matt Ness, and I believe... he wasn't too familiar with the KCI deck and could have maybe done things a little differently to actually maybe win that match.
Yeah, there were some things. This is one of the top eight matches I was able to watch, and the matchup was like, oh, he board wiped at the wrong moment, and because of that couldn't win. But it was just you know, that's the point of playing a deck like KCI.
Is
half of your wins, like you have a deck that can win, and it's good, and it does what it needs to do. And then that first tournament, you're going to win 25% of your matches because people are like, oh, that's how the rules work.
Yes.
That's what Amulet Bloom was doing when it was doing it.
Yes,
because
exactly.
It, literally every matchup it was winning, it was like half the opponents would like figure it out in game three. But by that point, you're ahead.
Yep.
Which thing do I need to counter? Which thing do I need to stop? Which thing is the best thing to remove? Do I need to remove the Primeval Titan? No, because it already went off.
Yeah.
And it got the lands it needed.
There was a bunch of KCI at the top tables, and I was just going around asking my friends, you know, like, what do I do against this? Like, what am I supposed to do? Like, do I exile it in response to the triggers with Relic or what?
Yeah, so let's kind of, I think, and maybe neither of us are totally read up exactly on, what is the rules complication of KCI?
I did look it up, and okay. I am pretty well versed in it.
I am pseudo judge.
I am actually a L1 judge now. But to my understanding, the way it works is they added six chromatic stars, or stars and spheres to the deck, and what you can do is KCI is a mana ability, and
they added Terrarians, Chromatic Sphere, Chromatic Sphere doesn't have this trigger. They added Terrarian. Chromatic Star and Ichor Wellspring are all the when this gets sacrificed, you draw a card.
That is right. Yeah. To my knowledge, the things that set the new rules technology that goes off is you pay for the cost of activating Chromatic Star, say, with the mana from KCI, and you're allowed to overpay by sacking all your artifacts that you want to sack at once. So you do it at a speed that is like paying the cost speed, which is like
faster than
anything before anyone gets priority. And so they all go to the yard at once, and everything that went to the yard that has a trigger involved all see each other. So like if you say you sack Scrap Trawler and Mirror Retriever and like a Star and like a Mindstone or whatever, mm-hmm. they all will see each other simultaneously, and you can just announce which triggers see what all the time, and they all go to your hand basically. And it keeps, it allows you to go off like a full turn earlier than you were previously able to my understanding, because of that interaction. It used to be you had to do it a little more piecemeal with mm-hmm. KCI and go like, all right, mirror, you know, Scrap Trawler sees this, Mirror Retriever comes
but
back.
But because Chromatic Sphere and Chromatic Star, you have to, because you can pay for it during yes. the sack trigger, you can then go off and grab things.
I believe that's right, and it has to do, I'm not sure it has to do with the fact that it's a mana ability, but I
well, yeah, it does.
It does, yeah.
For sure, the big thing is...
It's producing a mana.
Is because Ironworks... ability to sack artifacts produces mana. It's a mana ability which happens at the speed of tapping yeah. lands, which yes. you don't, there's no responses exactly. or anything, otherwise the game like breaks.
Yep.
but because of that, there's weird corner cases, and it's not even that necessarily this is new technology, it's just people realize, oh, it's more powerful if I do all of this at once, yes. and people can't deal with it
exactly.
in any way.
And I'm not even sure they were playing Chromatic Stars and Spheres before. They might have been. I'm not a KCI aficionado, but
because you don't have to pay the speed of mana doesn't, I think, matter if you're paying for anything, because you can just make mana with your lands. You just have to have priority, and once you have priority, yeah. no one can stop what you're doing.
Yes,
because
exactly.
everything you're doing is based on tap making mana.
That's right.
And then you just cast an Emrakul.
Yeah, and then you just slowly go off. I think he might have Pyrite Spellbombed more people than he Emrakul people. I think he had an Emrakul in the board. I might be wrong about that.
He has one Emrakul in the main. One Emrakul in the main. His like three main win conditions are one Hangerback Walker in the main, one Emrakul in the main, and the Pyrite Spellbomb that you rebuy using Scrap Trawlers and Mirror Retrievers.
Right. I think in the Modern Super League, he had his Emrakul in the board, actually. So his main win con was Pyrite Spellbomb.
Got it.
Which is a lengthy way.
He has two Ghurrapur Aether Grids in the side.
That's a nice
as his other win condition.
Yep.
And he has a Wormcoil Engine somewhere. Yeah.
Yep.
Two of those.
Yep.
Just a Wormcoil Engine. So that's
a pretty diverse top 8. Did we get every deck?
Mono Green Tron, Green Knight Hate Bears, we talked about when you played against them. You are the 8th player on this list, and we have not talked about your deck at all this whole podcast. Definitely didn't talk about it. Anything spicy from Jund before we just...
There was. I actually know Pearson. He's a SoCal grinder as well.
Sure.
Super psyched for him to make it. He had to eliminate his teammate for the win and they had to play against each other. They drove together. It felt bad, but... He made it. He was playing more discard than the average deck and had zero Fulminator Mages in the sideboard.
Yeah, zero Fulminator Mages. He did
strange.
Have one Thrun the Last Troll, which is always spicy.
Which I think is good for the mirror and when he's expected to play against Jund. He also, it's good against control.
It might just be, you know, and this is kind of my thought on Fulminator Mage on the side after playing enough games against Eldrazi decks or really Tron decks is like that matchup's a loss anyways.
He was so happy to have dodged me all tournament because we were at the top tables together the whole way. Terrible.
It's so bad, like regardless of if you're able to take out a few lands with Full Mirror Mage, that like it's almost maybe worth it to just like hope you dodge it and kill better other things.
Yeah, exactly. I think you shouldn't even board in Fulminators against my deck, so to
speak.
But against Tron, obviously you do. But he did really well, and he mentioned that he liked the extra discard that he had access to, and that's
only one
be...
K command, which is interesting.
Yep.
One pulse in the side, one in the main.
Yep.
Like it's definitely just a deck.
Multiple times I saw him playing next to me, and I will say he had Liliana Ultimates, multiple going. So he had like the zombie Liliana the Last Hope Ultimate going, and he also was -6ing a Liliana. And I actually saw him lose a game with both of those in play right next to me.
Ugh.
Yeah, he got attacked with Gideon Jira a bunch of times with Cryptic Commands.
That'll do it.
Yep.
Sweet. That's it for the top 8.
Yeah.
This was
so
a crazy tournament.
It was a crazy tournament. I still pretty surreal to me that it happened, and I feel like the deck definitely carried me a bit. And I think playing, you know, I'm really thankful to my days playing Red Green Eldrazi during Eldrazi Winter, just so that I could be more
have an idea of what's going
with
on
with the deck. Yeah.
Right now. Most played card in the tournament was Lightning Bolt. Noble Hierarch was second. Serum Visions was third. Fourth was Remand. Fifth was Aether Vial. Sixth was Blood Moon.
Oof.
Seventh was Snapcaster Mage. Eighth was Cryptic Command. Ninth was your buddy Reflector Mage. And 10th was Thalia, Guardian of Thraben.
Man, where's the Thought Knot Seers at?
Guardian? Thalia might have a chance to become the modern, especially if we don't unban Stoneforge Mystic, which I think would be sad. But if Jace is fine, Stoneforge Mystic is fine. But Thalia is definitely becoming the premier 2-drop white creature.
I would agree.
Yeah, so I think that this is an interesting most played creature. Was, you know, 10th place was Bloodbraid Elf. Didn't even make it to the
top five. That's impressive.
Zalia's Lieutenant was above Bloodbraid. Meddling Mage. Well, there's a lot of humans here.
Yeah, I mean, it is a
actually,
four
it's the human deck.
Yeah.
It's like Noble Hierarch is the most played creature, then Snapcaster Mage, then 3 through 9 are humans creatures.
Yes.
And then Bloodbraid Elf.
Yeah, yeah. I think humans is, you know, definitely a deck that I would look. I'm looking to be able to improve my matchup against. I think if I were just any modern player, any playing any deck, I want to make sure I'm ready for humans.
Yeah.
And even Jund has a hard time against it, so.
All right, so that's it for today's episode. I guess the main question I have for you is, where can people find you?
You know, people can find me mainly through the shop. I tend to be a little bit aloof when it comes to social media. I try to stay away from most of it, actually, but that's becoming harder and harder these days. So you can find me at Heidi Ho Gaming on Facebook. You can find me at Heidi Ho Gaming on Instagram. You can find me not on Twitter, unfortunately, although that may soon change. And I'm trying to think of anything else. You can always hit me up on Facebook.
I think it's time. Andrew Brown didn't have a Twitter until he top aided a GP, and then he made Merc Lurker. So that was the moment.
Drove by Merc Lurker.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
Once he won a GP, he was like,
"Well, I didn't win."
No,
so.
True. But like, I think, yeah, I think it's time.
Yeah, yeah.
That top
so
eight placement
I gotta
what matters.
I gotta fix that. But that's the main ways. Just outlets through Heidi Ho. You can always get at me if you know me or have a personal question. Feel free to email michael@heidihocomics.com.
That's, I think, the first email anyone's given out on the podcast.
Yeah, you know, I think that's totally fine. I'm fine with it. Other than that, yeah. Thanks for having me, Alex.
Yeah,
I appreciate it. And I hope this was informative and helpful to some people.
Yeah.
Going forward with the deck, I think it can be totally altered to be more grindy, more aggressive, less...
Yeah, what's like, if you had to say one thing to keep in mind always while playing the deck and one thing to say as like the thing you would change if you could do it differently?
The one thing to keep in mind when playing the deck is there are very few hands that I would keep that don't involve Eldrazi Temple, Ancient Stirrings, or Noble Hierarch. If I don't have any of those cards in my opening hand, in some ways like Tron, I would mulligan.
Sure.
It has to be very, I mean, it has to be, you know, like
the right
matchup
or something
with
crazy.
Like
skews.
Like,
yeah.
It has to be like a very high quality hand that doesn't involve those cards. The thing I would change about the deck, I think, you know, there is room to shave on Matter Reshaper and maybe a copy of Eldrazi Obligator just to be more grindy, whether or not that's more skews or maybe a second or third Endbringer or going bigger. I've seen some decks running Chandra, Torch of Defiance, and Worldbreaker. Those seem interesting to me as options.
I feel like if you can play Chandra, Torch of Defiance, you can play Anger of the Gods in the sideboard.
Exactly. I don't know how that guy did it, but his mana base was different. I'd also think about playing a Waste in the main if Field of Ruin and Blood Moon become staples. So
Blood was in the top five most played cards of the tournament.
And
Field of Ruin,
I
didn't have lands. But
I was lucky to dodge it. So.
Yeah, I would think Field of Ruin is quickly becoming one of the most played lands in the format.
Yeah, I agree.
So great. Thanks for having you. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We will talk to you guys next week. And Dominaria preview season starts on Monday, I think. So, hype.
Super hype.
All right. Thanks, everybody. Make sure to follow us on Twitter at the MMCast, at Cass Wiley, at Ben Bateman Media. Join the Facebook group. It's sweet. Please donate to the Patreon. We really can't do this podcast as regularly as we do without your help. Make sure to check out Kess.co. It is all of the cool things. There's a hoop contest going on right now. It's not super relevant to you guys, but if you buy an ice hoop at a Target right now and film a video of you doing a cool move with a ice hoop, you could win a trip to Los Angeles. You get to go to Harry Potter Land and Universal Studios. If you play Magic and you win this contest, it will also come with a draft of Unstable, and me and Ben will be the people going with you to Universal Studios. So
sick.
Definitely try that out. It's a random contest that has nothing to do with Magic, but we are doing it, and my company's doing it, so I'm opening up to you guys. Otherwise, we'll talk to you guys next week. Say bye, Michael.
Bye, guys. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for your attention. For further inquiries, send an email to the mmcast@rocketjump.com. See you later, alligator.